Hi, I'm Marie.
And I'm Emily.
And we're registered dietitians who love to look at the research when it comes to all things diets and supplements.
With years of working with professional and collegiate athletes, we've seen it all, and we're here to set the record straight.
On this podcast, we break down popular diets and supplements to let you know what's legit
and what's BS.
BS podcast. Today we are answering a question that we get a lot, that we talk about a lot in our practice, but we are talking all about cholesterol and more specifically, what do you need to increase in your diet or decrease in your diet or both to lower your blood cholesterol and why are we so worried about blood cholesterol? So we're going to be talking both dietary and blood cholesterol and everything that goes into that. At the end of our episode, we have a BSPS on the lion diet, which I had never heard of before. Emily has heard, I believe, on Joe Rogan about this, so you know it's going to be good. So we'll get to that at the end of the podcast. But before we get into all that, if you want to support the podcast and receive all sorts of nutrition tips, recipes, more, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/Arties vs. BS podcast. You can also find it by checking out the link in our show notes or in the link of our Instagram bio. And if you like our podcast, please be sure to subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or 5-star rating on Spotify. And please continue to send us any topic suggestions by DMing us on our Instagram at @Arties_VS_BS_pod or our contact page from our website, ArtiesVersusBS.com. All right, we have a big topic today, but before we get into it, Emily has a shit at the grocery store, and I'm very excited to learn about this because I'm just kind of looking at the notes, and I'm like, wow, it's not just in America.
No, I know. And now that I've started talking, for those of you who know me solely through my voice, probably can tell it is not 100%. I was in Cancun at a bachelorette party last weekend, and like I told Marie, my voice is not used to talking with 10 other women for 4 days. And it was wonderful and so great. And I don't have a voice, but at least you can still hear me. So hopefully by next episode, we are at 100%, but it was worth it. So this shit at the grocery store is a supplement. And I will admit, I did not see it at the grocery store, but my very own mother and her friend, who is a close family friend, asked me about this. And I said, you know what? I've never heard of it, but I'm going to talk about it on the podcast. So thank you, Mom and Mona. They asked me about spice fruit. I guess it's gained popularity in the form of a supplement, but the supplement is made from a fruit. This is a hard word to pronounce. It's Dichrostachys glomerata fruit, which is known, all the research I was finding kept phrasing it like this, saying known as the exclusive spice fruit. Like, I don't know what makes it exclusive, but it's found in Cameroon and West Africa. The claims are it can help with a healthy metabolism. Question marks there, but it naturally gets you healthy. Not sure how.
Oh, good. Sure. Yeah.
Naturally helps you get healthy, improve blood sugar, improve cholesterol, shed pounds and inches, and improve the overall way your metabolism functions. To get into the research all over the place, like when you look at the stuff, you could buy it on Amazon, and they say that it's been scientifically shown to help you lose pounds, inches, and body fat. Nearly 14 pounds, 1.5 inches around the waist, and 5.3% body fat on average in 8 weeks. There's one research study they are talking about that found these results. So I dove into it a little bit. It's from 2015. 48 people aged 23 to 55 over 8 weeks in Cameroon. And that these were their findings, that they lost this weight, reduced body fat, trimmed these inches from their waist, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so my thing is, okay, this was one study. But that's the thing with science is you can't take one study and say, this is now globally true And we can, like, mm-hmm. with confidence say, if you take this supplement, that this will happen to you too. No, that's, science needs to be reproducible. And so I went mm-hmm. in and I looked on Examine. I could find one thing about spice fruit or the Latin name. I looked on PubMed and I found one other human study on this stuff that was also done in Cameroon and also, you know, found that people lost weight. But my question is, why has there not been more human studies done in the past 9 years on this stuff? There's not enough research out there to sell this supplement saying, like, oh, it's been scientifically proven to do all of these things, when it happened twice in the past 9 years. We're not going to recommend any weight loss supplement. And that's another thing is, like, if it does work, like, everyone's going to know it. It's not going to be mm-hmm. like a surprise. I'm not going to be surprised. Like, oh, my mom knows about this thing that really works, and it's going to, like, work all over the world and, like, have to go digging for research. Yeah. Like, I don't know. They also had, like, a disclaimer in the supplement of, take this with a moderate calorie diet and 30
oh
minutes
my
of physical
God.
Activity, right? Well, and there was, you like this, there was a money back guarantee. And they say, if you take this for a month and you've been on a calorie restricted diet and you've been working out, you still don't see results, you'll get your money back. I know, of course. So that's spice fruit.
Yeah. Yeah, I always go back to, people act like there's some one small company that, like, has the secret to weight loss that nobody else has found out about. I'm like, we have an example of something that actually produces clinical levels of weight loss in Ozempic and the Ozempic-like drugs. Everybody knows about it. You know,
right.
Like, it was not kept a secret. Everybody knows about it.
Yeah, we would have heard about it. So
yeah,
that is our take on spice fruit. But yeah, let's get into today's big topic, which is cholesterol. We had a listener who wrote in saying, I just wondered what your view is on reducing cholesterol. Lots of confusing info out there about reducing sugar versus fat. So today we're going to do a deep dive into cholesterol. The plan is to kind of go through, define it, because cholesterol in food is different than the cholesterol in your blood. We're going to talk about how much cholesterol is okay to eat and then give some tips on how to reduce blood cholesterol levels.
All right. So what we're going to start with is what defining cholesterol, because like Emily just said, there's a difference between blood cholesterol and dietary cholesterol. And I really wish that they would give these different names. It actually really bothers me that they're both called cholesterol. And I don't understand who made that decision.
Probably the same people who made up the BMI and we just stuck with it forever.
Yeah. Dietary cholesterol, to start with, is a fat molecule, and it's something that you can get in food, and typically you're going to get it in animal foods or animal products that have fats in them. So it's a fat molecule called a sterol, so cholesterol. And the interesting thing about dietary cholesterol is that it's the same backbone as a bunch of different molecules that you'll probably recognize, such as testosterone, progesterone, vitamin D, cortisol, estradiol, which is what gets turned into estrogen, and bile acids. So that is dietary cholesterol. When you eat something with cholesterol, you are eating this fat molecule, which is in a category called a sterol. Blood cholesterol, I like to think of it as like a UPS packaging system. Blood cholesterol itself is something called a lipoprotein, which is basically like a packaging that can be dissolved into your blood. You have various sizes of lipoproteins or lipoproteins, and they are all different types of cholesterol. So basically, the size of the cholesterol gives it its name. So there's VLDL, LDL, and HDL, which is, VLDL stands for very low density lipoprotein, LDL stands for low-density lipoprotein, HDL stands for high-density lipoprotein, and I think there's one that's like IDL, that's like intermediate-density lipoprotein, but we don't really talk about that much. So as you can guess, the HDL, or the high-density lipoprotein, is the smallest of these molecules because it's more dense, and then the VLDL is going to be the biggest because it is the least dense. Again, these are like boxes, so they're these like round coatings where you essentially put fat into, so your dietary fats, and then that's how it goes through the blood and is dropped off at various body systems that the fat needs to go to get distributed to be energy, to be part of cell structure, like whatever that fat needs to become. That's essentially our delivery system in our blood, because you can't just, unlike sugar and protein, you can't just have fat be in the blood, because just like oil and water don't mix, dietary fat and blood, which is water-based, don't mix. So that's why we have to put it in this packaging called, unfortunately, cholesterol, because it's confusing. And so you put it into these various sized cholesterol molecules, and then those go ahead and they go through the blood. They're able to be dissolved into the blood. And then that's how essentially our fats are distributed throughout our body. So the cholesterol that you eat, again, is a type of fat. So cholesterol is packaged, dietary cholesterol is packaged into these blood cholesterol carrier molecules. So there is dietary cholesterol in blood cholesterol. I think yes. We're going to try and do our best to say either dietary cholesterol or blood cholesterol throughout this episode. But
it's so funny because I had one of our Patreon members, actually, she's a listener and Patreon member, and she was telling me that she is a teacher and had a student, she overheard a student telling his friends that he eats half a stick of butter every day because it's going to raise his testosterone. And she hears and walks over to him and goes, "Where did you hear that? And did I tell you this already?"
No.
Okay. She walks over to the student and goes, "Where did you hear that?" And he goes, "Oh, Gary Brecka."
Oh no. Oh my God.
Could have guessed. So Gary Brecka is taking this idea that, well, cholesterol is the backbone of testosterone. So if you eat half a stick of butter, that cholesterol is going to turn into testosterone. And I was just cracking up. I'm like, thank you for telling me that. And she like called him out. She's like, "I want you to actually look into that." Because it was an anatomy class. So she's like, "Let's talk about this." Crazy. Yeah, that's, you know, it's just funny that now we're talking about cholesterol. I've been meaning to tell you that story, but he's everywhere.
There's so much misinformation about cholesterol. It's insane. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we'll kind of get into it at the end, especially when we're talking about like, is high blood cholesterol caused by too much sugar, too much saturated fat? Like, what's it caused by? Not to like totally spoil the ending, but it's like, we really don't understand the mechanisms mm-hmm. of what goes on in the liver when it comes to blood cholesterol production. So we don't have super clear answers. Like, we have some ideas and we have some nutrition strategies that we have research on that seem to work, but we can't even fully explain the mechanisms. We just, we tested it. We do randomized controlled trials and we see the outcomes. So it's so frustrating when you've got some buffoon like Gary Brecka who's like, "I know the answer," you know?
Right. Oh, he knows. Yeah. So theoretically, in the past, it would have made sense that if you eat dietary cholesterol, it is your blood cholesterol level. So that used to be the recommendation was if you have high blood cholesterol, eat less cholesterol and that blood cholesterol level will go down. You know, they looked at the studies and they did not generally support that there is an association between eating cholesterol, dietary cholesterol, and cardiovascular risk, which is what we care about with high blood cholesterol levels, is heart disease.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't like totally out of whack why they had that idea. Again, even though these are two totally different things, dietary versus blood cholesterol, but dietary cholesterol does get packaged into blood cholesterol. So I think the thinking was if you have less things to put in a package, you're going to need less packages, right? What we know now and what we've kind of, I would say like the research seems to have like been pretty overwhelmingly supportive of this around 2010-ish. And then this really started getting put into guidelines between like 2010, 2015. But really what we see is that your outcomes for cardiovascular disease, so what is associated with the highest risk of cardiovascular disease, was more to do with that ratio of HDL to LDL cholesterol. So we found that when people had higher amounts of HDL cholesterol and lower amounts of LDL cholesterol, that we would have better outcomes when it comes to your risk of cardiovascular disease. Interestingly, I found this from a review in 2014 that I thought was funny. It said, it was specific to like, should you eat eggs or should you not?
Sure.
So it was like a review specifically looking at studies about eggs and the cholesterol. It says, this was from the conclusion, it says, these studies have consistently shown that egg intake is not related to either plasma cholesterol levels or to heart disease risk in men or women. These findings are consistent with the body of epidemiological analysis reporting that dietary cholesterol is unrelated to heart disease risk within populations. And I actually found a review as well that had a, it was an epidemiological review, and it looked at almost a million people. And wow. The number one predictor of cardiovascular disease was related to low HDL numbers. So we really found that your highest risk factor is having a low HDL and having a low HDL to LDL ratio. That was more affiliated with cardiovascular risk than what your total cholesterol number was. Although I will say in clinical practice and just having looked at probably at this point in my life, hundreds of blood panels, typically when somebody's LDL cholesterol is high, even if they're even if their HDL is low, which would drive down the total cholesterol number, like their total cholesterol is still typically high. So,
mm-hmm. You know, the reason why a high HDL number would be good for you and what, you know, Marie just said is she's never seen a high HDL and an overall high cholesterol is because HDL works in your body to help remove other forms of cholesterol from your bloodstream. Whereas the LDL kind of sticks in your bloodstream, can raise your risk for heart disease. Luckily, dietary cholesterol, not such a big impact as we thought it was in the past.
So if we're not worried about dietary cholesterol, there is also the association with saturated fat. And so now we're going to get into saturated fat versus unsaturated fat. So if you have no concept of what saturated fat is, you've never heard these words before, we have an entire episode on fats and oils. I would highly recommend that you go listen to that episode. We also have one on omega-3s where we also touch on this. So basically, what we do find still consistently in the literature, and the carnivore people hate this, and Gary Brecka hates this, but this is like so incredibly consistent in the literature, and it is frustrating that people are like saying that there's no evidence to support this. We see that when you reduce saturated fat intake and increase polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fat intake, we see a decrease in LDL cholesterol and an increase in HDL cholesterol. So I am not saying low-fat diet. Did I say low-fat diet, Emily?
You did not. And we can replay the tape. Press back 15 seconds.
Yes, I'll say it again. If you replace some, not all, some of your saturated fat with polyunsaturated fat or monounsaturated fat, we see an increase in HDL and a decrease in LDL. We see an improvement on your cardiovascular risk. Again, the mechanism for this is like really not well understood. We're not sure why saturated fat in particular tends to drive the production of LDL, whereas mono and polyunsaturated fats do not. But we have done countless randomized controlled trials, and we see these in large population studies as well, that this is very, very overwhelmingly the trend that we see. Again, to hit on it really quickly, saturated fat is going to be typically your fats from your animal sources, and polyunsaturated fats are going to be your fats from your plant sources for the most part. There's a few exceptions. But I do think that, again, going back to why were we so wrong about cholesterol in the past, if you think about where does dietary cholesterol come from, it comes from fat from animal sources. So when we took that out of diets, we were seeing improvements in people's blood cholesterols. What we found now is that it doesn't seem to be because of the dietary cholesterol, it's because of the dietary saturated fat. But they tend to come hand in hand if you're talking about where it's coming from in your food. So an example would be something like an egg. Yes, it has dietary fat. Yes, it has saturated fat, but it actually has pretty low amounts of saturated fat and higher amounts of cholesterol versus something like a fatty red meat is going to have higher amounts of saturated fat and lower amounts of cholesterol. And we see something like a fatty red meat is going to make way more of a negative impact when eaten in large quantities with other factors involved as well, obviously, versus something like eggs, which is mostly just cholesterol if you're looking at the fat content in that. I guess what's the word I'm looking for? We've exonerated eggs, finally.
Yes.
Well, we did it like 20 years ago, but people seem to think, just as people think that the food pyramid is still a thing, people seem to think that eggs are still being demonized, which they haven't been for about 20 years, but it's okay.
Right.
We're telling you now.
Right. And it's still in that category of everything in moderation. Like, if you are trying to reduce LDL cholesterol and raise HDL cholesterol, you still do want to watch saturated fat. They say about 10% of your calorie intake should be from saturated fat. So if you're the typical 2,000 calories per day, then that would be about 20 grams of saturated fat per day. And I think an egg with the yolk has 1.5 grams. So don't have like 15 eggs a day, or unless that's all the saturated fat you're going to have in a day. But yeah, I think the biggest red flag in the past, I mean, with the cholesterol, there's 200 milligrams of cholesterol in one egg, and the recommendation was less than 300. So if you had two egg yolks, it was like the end of the world. Not so anymore. So that is good. Now that we know that it's not so much the dietary cholesterol, but hey, maybe you went to the doctor and they say your HDL's low, your LDL's high. What do you do? First thing, replace some saturated fats that you're eating with unsaturated fats. Instead of cooking with a bunch of butter, you can cook with olive oil some of the time. Things like that. Another thing you can do that there's a lot of promise, and whenever I'm working with someone trying to lower their cholesterol, I like to focus on this first because it's like we're adding something instead of they're expecting to hear eat less of this, this, and that. But if you increase soluble fiber in particular, that has really been shown to help lower LDL cholesterol. The few that always stick in my mind is oats, citrus fruit, and psyllium husk, which sounds pretty random, but you can find it in most grocery stores. It's usually a powder and you can add it to pretty much anything. Metamucil is actually mostly made from soluble fiber. So if you take Metamucil, then there you go. But there are lots of natural like food ways to get some soluble fiber as well. You know, the other recommendations are just basically based around that lower saturated fat and more fiber. So they find that a higher fiber diet in general is helpful. So, you know, from here on out, we're going to say all the things you hear about pretty much every healthy recommendation, which is eat more whole grains and beans and nuts and vegetables and fruits, eating lean protein sources to reduce that saturated fat intake while still getting protein. So chicken and fish and low-fat dairy. I actually hadn't really heard this much until recently. A client asked me because she'd heard if you watch your carbs and eat fewer carbs, will that help lower my LDL? And that's something I'd never really heard be associated before. Had you heard that, Murray?
Yes, but not in a, like, I heard it in like a myth about nutrition kind of way. I'd heard that there's talk about this. So I took a little bit of a deep dive of like, what does literature have to say? Because again, the literature is very clear when it comes to saturated fat and fiber. So what does it say about sugar? It's unclear is like my best answer. So we do see this really weird phenomenon in people with diabetes, where 70% of people with diabetes also have dyslipidemia. So what dyslipidemia is any type of irregular blood work related to lipids or fats. So could be high triglycerides, could be high total cholesterol, low HDL, anything like that. So that's all sort of packaged in this umbrella of dyslipidemia. And that just seems like a very high coincidence rate of like those two things being tied together. And I do think that because of that, people were thinking, well, maybe there's something about sugar metabolism that does impact cholesterol, because a disease that is specific to sugar metabolism, very highly associated with dyslipidemia and typically high cholesterol, low HDL. One thing that is hypothesized, now none of these are like fully proven or whatever, but these are some hypothesized mechanisms, is basically the first thing is that HDL cholesterol, again, this is your good cholesterol, your cholesterol that kind of cleans up your blood and takes away any, you know, lone cholesterol that's building up in your plaque, stuff like that. They're thinking that HDL cholesterol production might actually be directly involved with insulin sensitivity. And I think that part of that has to do with if you have a bunch of plaque building up in your blood and you are unable to kind of clear all that out because you have lower HDL, that is part of the cause of having poor insulin sensitivity. So basically, how insulin works, it's essentially like a lock and key mechanism where it has to, the insulin has to find the outside of the cell, unlock the cell, for lack of a better term, and then any sugar that you have in your blood can get into the cell. If you have a bunch of plaque lining your arteries, there's less ability, like basically less surface area for the insulin to be able to find these cell walls and unlock it. So by having less ability to like clear out the gunk in your blood, and I'm using like really stupid terms right now, I understand this, but I'm just trying to simplify it down and give a visual. But without your HDL being able to do that, the thinking is, well, maybe your insulin's essentially not able to find its keyhole and can't unlock the cell to let the sugar in. And then that could be potentially causing some of that insulin sensitivity, which would cause diabetes for somebody. So again, this is not proven. This is just a mechanistic theory. What we do definitely see is that typically when somebody is like over consuming sugar, they're not just over consuming sugar. Like they're over consuming calories. And typically you're over consuming both fat and sugar, because most satiating sugar containing products also contain fat. Essentially, like you tend to just be eating an excess calorie. And if you're eating like an excessive amount of calories, you have an excessive amount of energy that you need to transport. And if it is in the form of fat, then you need an excessive amount of those transporter molecules, your blood cholesterol, to actually transport all of this excess calorie that you have. So part of the, again, this mechanistic thinking is, well, maybe just overconsumption of calories is causing the need to have higher cholesterol for more transport of these calorie containing molecules. Interestingly, like I said earlier, when you switch from saturated fat to unsaturated fat, we see a decrease in LDL cholesterol and an increase in HDL. And this is without any weight loss. So if people's weight stays exactly the same and they just make that switch, we do see those changes. We also see a decrease in LDL cholesterol when somebody who is obese loses about 5 to 10% of their weight of body fat. So we see the same effect with just switching your fat source as we do of losing 5 to 10% of your weight. And so then the mechanistic thinking is, okay, well, it's likely just due to your decreasing calories. You have less demand of like having to spread these fat molecules around your body. You have less demand for needing to create blood cholesterol as it is. And again, if you're decreasing total calories to lose weight, you're probably decreasing sugar, you're probably decreasing carbs, you're decreasing all of it. Maybe that's why we're seeing sometimes like sugar associated with high cholesterol as well. So again, long story short, like the sugar piece there, we have no proven like mechanism of this is why sugar specifically is increasing your LDL and decreasing your HDL. We see that people who have diabetes tend to also have cholesterol that is not within normal ranges. We have some ideas of why that might be happening, but I haven't seen any data to show that because of sugar specifically, cholesterol goes up.
Yeah, that was a really good explanation of it. It's something that I'd never really thought through because I had never until recently had someone ask me about it. But yeah, that all makes sense. So that is cholesterol. So to summarize all of that, first, I would say it's not necessarily dietary cholesterol that we should be watching, but instead saturated fat. You want to keep it to 10% or less of your total calorie intake should be saturated fat. It's about 20 grams. And also eating a lot of soluble fiber in the form of oats, citrus fruits, psyllium husk. You can Google, they'll give you a huge list of all sorts of different foods, and that should help as well. And eggs are okay. And if you love eggs and, you know, you're still worried about the saturated fat, I mean, like I said, there's 1.5 grams in each egg yolk. You can always make a couple whole eggs with some egg whites as well. Egg whites don't have any saturated fat in them. So that's always an option, but I'm all for keeping in the egg yolk. There's a lot of good vitamins and minerals in there that, you know, you don't want to be missing out on. So eggs are okay.
Yes. And I would like to point out again that we did not tell people to go on a low-fat diet to reduce their cholesterol, in case anybody out there still thinks that dietitians tell people to go on low-fat diets.
If someone has not been listening to any dietary advice over the past 30 years, that has totally changed.
Yeah. In case you somehow zoned out for the first 35 minutes of this episode and are just now paying attention.
Hopping in.
Yeah.
So the BSPS for today fits in perfectly because this is called the Lion Diet. So while we're talking about cholesterol, this is a diet that includes a lot of cholesterol and saturated fat. So this was a listener submission. Our listener said, "Hey there, being a science and evidence-driven nerd myself, a speech-language pathologist, I absolutely love your podcast. I recently heard about something called the Lion Diet, where you only eat meat from ruminant animals, salt, and water. Sounds incredible, but a colleague of mine has a friend who's trying it. Gross." That's not me. That's the listener. "Keen to hear your collective thoughts. Thank you for your commitment to science," in all caps. Love it. So the Lion Diet, I thought I hadn't heard of it. And then I start researching and I come across the lady who's kind of pioneering the Lion Diet and realize that I had heard a clip of her. I am pretty sure she was on the Joe Rogan podcast, of her just talking about her story and this diet and thinking how crazy it was then. So it's another version of the oh so popular carnivore diet. This takes it to a whole other level. I will admit I had to look up what ruminant means, because you're supposed to only eat meat from ruminant animals and have salt and water. So no eggs, no dairy, no fish, no chicken, because it's not a ruminant animal, because I looked this up, ruminant meat includes any meat from animals with rumen. Ruminant animals have multiple stomachs, have hooves, and generally eat grass. The list of animals that are ruminants are cows, bison, deer, moose, and sheep/lamb, and goats. You can have any of those animals I just listed. You can eat meat from there and salt and water. And the Lion Diet is meant to be, the lady on her website refers to it as a healing elimination diet. So it's like carnivore, but it's also meant to be an elimination diet. So this website, oh my gosh, I need to show it to you, Marie. I think it's just liondiet.com. Yes, liondiet.com. The lady who's pioneering all of this, her name's Michaela Fuller. And she's a lifestyle blogger and podcast host who claims she was able to improve her health by making these changes to her diet. This website reads like a blog, and I could not get enough of it. So supposedly, she says, people who followed this Lion Diet have reported improvements in energy levels, mental health, symptoms of digestive and autoimmune conditions. Her story is one that you'd imagine, like a million different autoimmune diseases growing up and then tried everything. And then as soon as she just ate ruminant meat and salt and water, everything was great. And now she's telling the whole world that they should be on this diet. She says on her website, in quote, I quote this, This website is devoted to sharing information on dietary and lifestyle changes in the hope that it can help you put your illness into remission. And that is the first red flag of many. She argues that our bodies are sick and can become damaged, not just from diet, but from your environment if you're exposed to mold and biotoxins, as well as medications like psychiatric drugs. It gets pretty crazy. Or a dysbiotic microbiome that can occur if you were born through a C-section or if you've been treated with antibiotics like a baby. This is the kind of stuff we're talking about. Like telling people that if they were born through a C-section, which is millions and millions and millions, tens of millions, 100 million probably people, that that's why they're sick. Let's see. This is another quote. It can also be caused by living in water-damaged houses. I mean that. You had a leak in your kitchen that you fixed with a fan and you think that fixed it? You're probably wrong if you're here. Marie's like seething.
I'm reading ahead.
It's crazy.
She's basically Jordan Peterson claiming she can cure all mental illness and all chronic diseases and all diseases that you can't pinpoint what they came from. And so now she's going to blame it on C-sections. And just being like, in case the carnivore diet wasn't restrictive enough for you, here's the lion diet. I've named it the lion diet because it's the foods that lions eat, which obviously means humans should eat it too.
Also, another line she says is meat is mainly absorbed in the small intestine. And because there are no tiny little plant pesticides like lectins that naturally occur in plants, it's not irritating to an immune system, blah, 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 blah. We're bringing up all of the things. Yeah. Also, lectins are not plant pesticides.
They're not. They're implants, but they're not plant pesticides. These people literally are just like compounding upon each other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, because she has the same rhetoric as Jordan Peterson. I don't know if we've ever talked about him on this podcast.
I don't think so.
He was one of the pioneers of the carnivore diet, and he made it popular by claiming that it cured both him and his daughter's mental illness. And then his daughter made her entire career was built off of the carnivore diet. And then it came out that she has not been following the carnivore diet for years. But she's still on social media claiming that she was on it and she was off of her depression medications because of this diet. Right. So,
okay. I think that's who I was thinking of because this woman. I don't know. Because I remember I was.
His daughter's name was Michaela.
There you go. And then it was. Okay. Our stories are coming together. Okay. I remember it was a father-daughter thing. And there was like a lot of. Yeah. Maybe it is. Because I've heard this story before.
Oh my God. Yep. This is her. That's so funny. I'm like, wow, this really sounds like something from his daughter. Yep. Nope. This is his daughter. But it totally makes sense, right? Like she took her father's concept that was selling well, but she had to make it more extreme. Mm-hmm. And this is caveat here. I have zero evidence for this in the moment. Like maybe I'll find the evidence for this. I did hear that she hasn't actually been following this diet for many, many years. She's just been selling it.
I heard that too. And she did technically say it's elimination diet. So like you do it for a while and then add stuff back in. But like even when saying that, on her website, she kind of does that blaming the person if it doesn't work thing. Yeah. She says, while, you know what I'm talking about? Like, while you are eating ruminant meat and salt and water and nothing else, I'll read it word for word. While doing this, you need to make sure your environment is clean from mold and biotoxins that grow in water-damaged buildings. The diet won't fix you 100%, and reintroductions will be impossible if you don't look at your environment and fix it. So, like, it's not only the diet, it's the mold and the biotoxins and the things that you don't even know you're breathing in every day. And then there was this whole piece about vitamins, because you're not getting all the vitamins and minerals you need from just eating the diet. And so I'll start reading this again, word for word. If your vitamins are depleted, The first thing you should check is whether you've been or are currently being exposed to mold or a water-damaged building. This can absolutely plummet vitamin levels regardless of diet. And it's like, Michaela, we get it. You were in a mold and water damaged building. Like, that doesn't mean that this is going to be the truth for every single person. Like,
citation needed for how somehow removing water damage increases your vitamin levels.
Oh my God. Just like one person and her story, and now it must be true for all of us. It's insane.
What I hate about people who say that the carnivore diet is an elimination diet is the point of an elimination diet is to figure out what foods, if any, is causing your issues. But the carnivore diet claims, but nothing with, okay, so back up, not like a FODMAPs diet, which is a validated elimination diet. Nothing about the FODMAPs diet claims that the foods that you are eating is curing anything. It's just claiming like, hey, let's take a bunch of stuff out. Let's add stuff in slowly. And let's see if we can identify what's causing your problems. Mm-hmm. The carnivore diet claims to be an elimination diet, or some of these like more extremist people like her claim that it's an elimination diet. But then she also has a claim of its healing powers, which is not true of an elimination diet. There's nothing about an elimination diet that's healing you. Elimination diet identifies. It doesn't heal. But the carnivore people claim that both the carnivore diet heals and it, I don't even know if they, like, all these carnivore people, like, slowly, it seems, reintroduce stuff back into their diet. I think because they become really fucking sickly and then they're like, well, you know, I'm healed, so now I can eat fruits again.
Right. But it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It won't. Like, I'm sure listeners can know that this is getting a very strong BS stamp. There have been zero studies.
I also think it's unethical to put somebody on this diet.
I know.
Especially after what we just talked about with cholesterol. Right. I can guarantee you their cholesterol went up on this diet.
Yeah.
We see it in the keto diet. I mean, when people go on keto diets, we tend to see their cholesterol go up because they're eating higher amounts of saturated fat.
Right. We are not lions.
Yeah.
We are humans. We did talk about the carnivore diet a while back before it really like exploded in popularity. But this one is just, I don't have one pro. This is the crazy. And when the listener sent this in, I immediately thought like, oh, this will be a quick, like, this is just, but then I got into the, you know, mold and biotoxins and the vitamin depletion and how we're healing, you know, mental illness and stuff. And it's like, come on. Yeah. No science behind this one. That's safe to say.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, listeners, for listening to another episode of RDs versus BS podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you have questions, comments, suggestions on topics, you know how to reach out to us. Also check out the Patreon. It's been slowly growing and it's been fun. I'm recording a cooking video this week to put up. So looking forward to that. And until next time, I'm Emily.
And I'm Marie.
And don't let the BS get the best of you.